Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lavo. Folks, can't help but feel a little bit nostalgic this week with Doral back on the PGA Tour schedule for the first time since 2016. And Rex, you and I have both been down there before. It's always a happening. It's always sort of a signal that it was an important event to kick off an important stretch of the PGA Tour season. Does it still feel like that way to you right now in 2026?
I had a colleague bring this up in Hilton Head a few weeks ago that he didn't want to go down and cover this event because he wanted to remember the way Doral was. And I certainly understand the meaning there, because if you go back historically in your career, certainly in my career, and I don't think this is a stretch, you could have made an argument for a long time that Doral was the start of the PGA Tour season, either officially or unofficially. That's where the stars came together. Before there were signature events, before there were World Golf Championship events, there was Doral. And that's where players wanted to show up. It was a big golf course. It was a full-size golf course that really got you ready for the rest of the season. Miami was a happening place. And I go back to the Ford Championship days, where there was the Sunday where Tiger and Phil had a very rare head-to-head on a Sunday afternoon with those two in the final pairing. And I would compare it to a Ryder Cup, to an Open Championship, to a Masters, the excitement level, the people lining the fairways. And I think this colleague had a good point, because it was such a special stop on the PGA Tour for so long. And it was such a part of the fabric of the PGA Tour for so long. It's going to fit in. It's going to be great that the PGA Tour goes back, but I don't know if you can rekindle that magic.
Yeah, I think this, I'm viewing this year as sort of a one-off. You look at where the event is falling. It's an additional signature event pushed at the end of April. You now have nine signature events on the PGA Tour schedule that needed to make room for a $20 million event in the Cadillac Championship. I don't think, at least according to Adam Scott, who's a member of the Future Competitions Committee, that this is going to be sort of its set spot in the schedule. I think Doral can be and sort of can rekindle some of those old feelings. It can be a happening. It can be a big event if the PGA Tour actually uses it at the beginning of the season. Remember, one of the tenets of Brian Rolapp, what he's talking about with his future schedule, one of those tenets, Rex, is starting big, making it feel like it's important, having sort of a big kickoff to the PGA Tour schedule. Obviously, the Hawaii swing was not it. As you and I talked about on the Sunday night podcast, I don't really necessarily think that the American Express would be either. But having it in Doral, having a big event, whether it's the first event of the season or the second event of the season, just is going to feel a little bit bigger. It's going to draw a better feel. We're going to get into that in a moment. I just think it could potentially be a bolder start and go where the players are. Most of the best players in the world live in South Florida. Yeah. Make it convenient for them. Make it a little bit more accessible as well, especially at a time of year where guys are going to be looking for some reps.
Well, and it also checks some other boxes that Brian Rolapp has talked about. One, it's a major market. It's right in the heart of Miami. You look at the soccer stadium they're building for the Miami team. I mean, it's less than 2 miles, I think, from there. And it sort of surrounds the airport. Literally the city center. You don't get to have that very often in golf. So it certainly checks that box. And it's also, I would argue, an iconic venue. It's changed over the years. It's not the Doral that we all remember, but it's still an iconic venue. So it checks all the boxes. I think you're right. If you didn't start the season there, I think maybe it's the second event of the season would be a huge opening for this event and to maintain what it has been historically, because it's always been that sort of start to the golf season. And it would be a perfect fit.
It is, however, the weakest signature event that we've ever had, just in terms of the field strength. It's a 72-man field, no cut. We're missing five of the top 15 players in the world: Roy McIlroy, Matt Fitzpatrick, Ludvig Åberg, Xander Schauffele, Bobby McIntyre, among the group that is not going to be playing. Patrick Cantlay also withdrew on Tuesday. Michael Thorbjornsson is in the field. Brooks Koepka, at this point, is now the second alternate into the field. I think every player is hoping that this, sort of to go back to that point, is a one-off, and that you're not going to have back-to-back signature events then leading into a major championship. So Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, is in the field this week at Doral, not expected to play next week at Quail Hollow. Rory McIlroy, not in the field this week in Miami, is expected to play next week at Quail Hollow. The whole point of the signature events was to get all of the best players on the PGA Tour together, just alleviating some of the congestion, alleviating some of desires for the top players not to have three big events in a row at this point in the schedule, after you've already gotten through the year's first major, just makes a lot of sense for the PGA Tour schedule makers. But it is what it is. This year, you and I are still very much looking forward to the tournament.
We are. And I think for all the right reasons, it was a good addition to the PGA Tour schedule. And I think looking ahead would be the more interesting conversation here. Because you're right, it has been put in a terrible spot. I'm not quite sure in whatever version of Brian Rolapp's schedule is going to become of the PGA Tour, either in 2027 or 2028 or beyond, there's going to be anywhere else to put it. Because under the scenarios that you and I have heard for quite a while now, it's going to be, let's call it 20, 21, 22 events that are either signature events, the Players' Championships, or major championships. Now, there's some built-in off weeks there, so you do have certain areas where you can probably manipulate this. We did this experiment, and we can have this conversation about, should the off week be before a major championship? Should it be the week after a major championship? We can continue to have that conversation, but it's inevitable, if that's the schedule you want, that we're going to end up with stretches like this, right? Like, I don't know how you get around this, because we both agreed, we both enjoyed the Zurich Classic on Sunday. We both liked the concept of a team event. It has no place in whatever the tier one events are going to be on the PGA Tour anymore. I have nothing against New Orleans. I love covering that event. You and I both love food and brown liquor. It's a very good place to go enjoy both of those things. However, it doesn't have a place in the new schedule. And so you're not going to have, at least as bad as this season is from a scheduling perspective for the top players. And you're seeing that right now. You're seeing the load management in real time on the PGA Tour, with Scotty probably skipping next week, as you pointed out, with Rory taking the last 2 weeks off. That's going to continue to happen as we get further and further into this schedule, because there's no real relief. And if we end up with the schedule that we all think we're going to end up with, or Brian Rolapp hopes he ends up with it, I don't know where the pressure valve is. I don't know where you can just release something and be like, okay, you guys can take these 2 weeks off, because you don't have that window on the calendar right now.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to bat 1,000 with all of the best players in the field, unless you're literally contracting them to do so, which is an entirely different conversation, which gets a little bit messy as well. But just letting it breathe a little bit. The PGA Tour schedule has gone from being a never-ending marathon where you start at the beginning of January and it goes all the way to the end of November. Now it's a very condensed sprint, which again, as we've outlined, the Future Competitions Committee might be even more incentivized to make it even more condensed to be on the back end of the football season and preempt the football season at the end of the summer. That comes with a whole lot of complications in terms of load management. Just letting it breathe a little bit does not appear, Rex, to be an easy solution unless you really build in some off weeks and eliminate some tournaments, which again, if you listen to Brian Rolapp, scarcity does not necessarily mean to him we're lopping off 15 to 20 PGA Tour events. Yeah. And it's just going to be his core product. It's just a little bit of a reshuffling. I've been enjoying some of the reports out of the golf course and what is going to happen this week. If you remember Doral, which again has not been on the PGA Tour schedule since 2016, but did host a live event for a couple years. It's still big. It's still brawny. They've added a couple tee boxes. 18 of the Blue Monster is still one of the most difficult finishing holes on the planet this week in particular, because it is a resort golf course for the 51 other weeks of the year. The rough is not as long as it could be. Just a little bit of a guessing game. It's about an inch in length as opposed to 2.5-3 inches that we typically see on the PGA Tour with some of these tougher venues. If you're looking for players to watch, obviously ball striking, in particular that 175 to 200 range in the iron play. Yes, that's you, Scottie Scheffler. Yes, that's you, Cameron Young, and you, Colin Morikawa. I would put those three players as your favorites this week. Also, what Rex wanted to touch on, Alex Fitzpatrick, who was part of that team win last week at the Zurich Classic. He obviously did accept PGA Tour membership, is not on the flight to Turkey. He was going to play on the European Tour. It's a pretty wild story, just how much his life has changed over the past couple of days. Supposed to be in Turkey, was then going to play Barcelona, was then going to have the PGA Championship off. Now, as you mentioned, I think you called it like the PGA Tour Plus schedule or the PGA Tour Plus card, where He's into the signature events. He can pick and choose the other events. You can call them tier two tournaments if you want to moving forward. He's going to be in many of the major championships. That 2.5-year exemption really is massive, because it just takes a little bit of the stress off. He's never had a base. He has been bumming off his brother in South Florida when he is in the U.S. Otherwise, he's been living in a living out of a suitcase while traveling the world on the European tour. I think it's going to take him a little bit of time to get settled. He sort of he said this week's Cadillac Championship is akin to his first day of school. But having that 2.5 year buffer is such a massive boon for a player who has really never had a set schedule and has really had the freedom to just sort of settle into to his playing privileges.
It's been fun watching him come into his own, as we talked about on Sunday. He's playing the best golf of his career this year. He won just a few weeks ago on the DP World Tour in India. And you look at his other starts, he was clearly trending in that direction. He was getting better with each start. And we all know about Matt Fitzpatrick, how he has reinvented himself, I would say twice now. I mean, I would say this is Matt Fitzpatrick 3.0, based on sort of the transformation that he went through, picking up all that speed, getting to Brookline, the U.S. Open, sort of accomplishing what he was able to do then. He's always been a staple on the Ryder Cup. But there was last year, there was this lull that I think he needed to get through, probably this time around more mental than it was any physical or technical changes he needed to make to his swing. Certainly teaming up with Phil Kenyon has been huge for him as far as on the greens putting wise, because you can make the argument he's a lot like Scottie Scheffler, that his ball striking got to a point it was so good that if he just putted average, if you just give me a zero across the board, don't give away strokes, you're probably going to have a good chance of winning. And you see that. I don't think he's quite as consistent as a Scottie Scheffler or someone like that, but it is
over the past month and a half. He has been.
But it's going to be fun for Alex, to your point, because you're right. It's not even the 2 years. And this got brought up over the broadcast last week in the early round coverage. It's that half a year. I think that is so big because you get that cushion. And if you win at the right time, and this is all about timings, not only do you get that half year to sort of just spread your wings and play with house money, but you also do it in the biggest events. He's playing in all of those signature events. He's playing in at least one major coming up. You would think he'd have a really good chance at this point to make it into the playoffs. You have an opportunity of setting yourself up for next year and beyond, because we all know how difficult it is to crack that top 50 and how different those two schedules are. And now he's been given not just a tour card. Well, given is not the right word. He's earned a tour card, but he's also earned a fast track. And if he can take advantage of this, he could really set himself up really for the next 2 or 3 years.
It is interesting, too, because although he is into the signature events, this year does not necessarily guarantee him signature event status for the following year. He's going to have to make hay. He's going to have to be among the top 50. He's going to have to win again in early 2027 to be a part of those tournaments. I thought it was very ironic when you look at sort of the turning point for Alex Fitzpatrick, where he was with Mark Blackburn, swing coach to the Stars here in the States, made the move to Mike Walker towards the end of last year on the European tour when he was scuffling. He was not even guaranteed to keep his playing privileges for 2026. Ends up turning it around, keeps his card. Now he's off and running for this season. The exact opposite happened for Matt Fitzpatrick, if you'll remember. Mike Walker was his childhood coach, made the switch to Mark Blackburn in the States in April 2025, turned around his game. His iron play has completely flipped. Now he's the number three player in the world, playing the best golf of his life. So the brothers have actually changed swing coaches to the opposite. Very curious to see which way they go in the future as well. Alex Fitzpatrick has always been tabbed as a more explosive player than Matt Fitzpatrick. But the level of improvement that we continually see from Matt, I think, is the most fun part, because he hasn't just made like these incremental changes. He has made some pretty significant changes with his iron play, with his driving, with the cross-handed chipping. Guy just gets better and better. And keep in mind, he was an awesome amateur player as well. One other storyline that I thought was interesting, Rex, that I've been tracking this week, is Justin Rose, who has new clubs in the bag this week. He actually becomes the first player ambassador for McLaren. And if you are familiar with that name, yes, that is the automotive and Formula One company that is getting into golf for the first time. And Justin Rose is a part of this new venture. And Rosie talked to the media earlier this week in Miami. He said he's using the McLaren Club's 4-through pitching wedge. But on its face, this is pretty surprising. This is a player who's in his mid-40s. He won earlier this year at the Farmers Insurance Open in dominating fashion. He was leading on the second nine at the Masters, Rex, less than a month ago, before he blew it right on 11 and made bogey before he missed the green on 12. The par three, ended up having a pine cone nestled near his ball, made bogey as well before he three putted from 25 feet on 13 to lose the Masters in agonizing fashion yet again. He's gone down this road before. Remember, as the world number one in Hanma clubs in 2019, that was a short-lived experiment that he later conceded was a mistake. Are you a little bit surprised by this move from Justin Rose, given the quality of golf that he's playing and at this juncture of the season with three major championships still to go?
Yes, I'm a little surprised because he's been down this road before, as you pointed out, and admitted that it was a bad road for him to go down. And this isn't unique to Justin Rose. This isn't unique to any PGA Tour player. You can probably go down any given range on a PGA Tour and point to the guys who've made equipment changes, not because they felt like they were going to better equipment, because they got bigger contracts. And that is not a recipe for success. We've seen it time and time again. It happens less and less often now on the PGA Tour just because of the shift and sponsorships away from equipment manufacturers into larger. I mean, you look at most hats on the PGA Tour now. They're financial institutions, they're advertising firms, they're whatever KPMG is. I'm not even quite sure what they sell. It's whatever RSM is. I don't know what RSM is. They've been covering that event for the past 15 years or so. So that helps out on that front. I think it gives players, we talk about this all the time, a player is not in a contract anymore. Tommy Fleetwood being the primary example, and he can go start experimenting. He can start going and seeing which irons he likes best, which driver, which golf ball fits here and there. It's almost liberating when you talk to players about this, that I don't have to be married to one equipment manufacturer going forward. Even though you're probably leaving some money on the table, I think most, at least managers in the business, will tell you it's probably best because you're going to end up making more than that on the golf course.
Remember Brooks Koepka? That was one of the keys to his success in the major championships in that 2017 to 2021 period. He was brand agnostic. And if you listen to Justin Rose, and look, he wasn't going to say, oh yeah, you're right, this is a huge risk. You know, I've definitely got some doubts. He did not say that at all, but he said, look, I've been an equipment free agent for the past couple of years now, picking and choosing the clubs that I want. When you look back at what he had in the bag at the Farmers Insurance Open earlier this year when he won and again dominated the field, he had a Callaway driver, he had TaylorMade woods, he had Miura irons, he had Titleist wedges, he had a Scotty Cameron putter. Like, he was all over the board. And he said he was very conscientious of what had happened last time when he chased a new equipment company, tried to put it in the bag, and it did not work. He said it is going to be a different story this time because he has brought his exact specifications to McLaren, and they are essentially building the clubs to his preferences. And again, it's on a limited basis. It's four through pitching wedge. He doesn't quite have the woods at this point. He doesn't have the wedges to this point. He doesn't have the putter, although they could potentially design all of those clubs in the future. It's a pretty soft launch for this new equipment company, what Justin Rose is putting in the bag. However, you look at what is sort of the bread and butter for Justin Rose, it is his iron play. And so that's one thing that I'm going to be paying really close attention to, not just this week at Doral, where again, he's going to have to really hit the clubs from 175 to 200 exceedingly well. Next week at Quail Hollow, if the Truist Championship is another big ballpark, he's going to have to rely on those clubs as well, specifically how big the greens are and hitting it to sections. What do we know about Aronimink? Really tricky greens as well, where you're going to have to be sectioned off and being pinpoint precision. Justin Rose, I think, could win a major championship in 2026, given the quality of play that we've seen over the first few months of the year. It's definitely a surprise to me. I'm not sure there's ever a great time to make an equipment change. Middle of April, ahead of the heart of the major championship season, definitely doesn't seem like the most ideal one.
And we just had a long conversation about Matt Fitzpatrick and how much you respect his work ethic, because he didn't come by all these changes by accident. He didn't stumble into cross-handed chipping. He practiced it and he looked at the data. He looked at the results. He broke down all the pros and cons of trying to do it this way versus another way. And I think listening to Justin Rose speak this week at Doral about the equipment changes, he would make the argument that he had been playing clubs, at least irons, that were underperforming statistically. You can see all of that now. I mean, with the degree of technical expertise with launch monitors now, there aren't really any more questions. You can say it doesn't feel right, but you and I have seen this on a range a lot. The idea that, nope, that the numbers say it's perfect. It may not feel good in your hands, but you're hitting that ball as well as you possibly can. You're going to experience that I think tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
On Thursday at TPC Sawgrass, despite driver yips that have befuddled and bewildered me over the past couple of years, I will be on the range at TPC Sawgrass.
Jason's got you. He'll take care of you.
Get fit for new clubs. I don't think there's any helping me, but we're going to try. It's also going to be interesting, Rick, just to see how Justin Rose plays over his next couple of tournaments. Because, again, he was a couple shots here or there for potentially winning the year's first major.
It's a risk.
At the Masters, a disappointment. Absolutely. But it certainly is a risk. And curious to see how it goes. How about one of the other stories of the week, Rex, with LIV Golf? And you'd made sort of a passing comment about moving. You and I both strongly dislike TPC Louisiana, which has been the host site for the Zurich Classic for more than a decade at this point.
You said, hey,
just put it at City Park, Bayou Oaks. It's right in the heart of the French Quarter.
Wait, how did you say that?
I think people would love it.
Say it again.
Bayou Oaks?
Bayou. Bayou Oaks.
All right.
Bayou.
Nah, whatever.
Oh, boy.
It's in the bayou. Sorry about that.
I apologize to all our friends in New Orleans. We're sorry.
In any case, it may have just opened up, Rex, some potential flexibility for a venue. That is because LIV Golf is postponing its event at City Park, which was scheduled for late June. And if you read the various statements from LIV Golf in particular, it is absurd on many fronts. LIV Golf in its statement called it a, quote, strategic decision to avoid the summer heat in New Orleans, as well as the World Cup programming, both of which were very known quantities. Summer heat been known for generations in New Orleans, and World Cup did not just sort of pop out of nowhere in terms of when they were going to be playing. And of course, they're not going to be having any matches in New Orleans as well. They said, both LIV and the state, they're going to, quote, explore the possibility of having a scaled down event in New Orleans in fall, keeping in mind that the LIV 2026 season only runs through the end of August. What was your reaction to this news, and is this sort of the first domino to fall?
I think reporting around LIV Golf and what may come at the end of this season has been pretty sporadic. And I do think it's important to be careful here, because we all think we know what we know. And in this particular case, the Public Investment Fund doesn't have to say anything. Saudi Arabia doesn't have to announce that, yes, indeed, we are stepping away at the end of this year.
And they haven't.
And they have not, and they will not. I think if you look at what they outlined earlier this month, the idea that they want that fund to start being they want to use those funds to start investing internally and not externally. The fact that LIV Golf wasn't specifically mentioned in the new plan for the Public Investment Fund, I think all of those sent up alarm bells. It's the reporting that's done beyond the golf media. I would say the Financial Times and global reporting that was done in the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times and the New York Times. That's the reporting that I think we all need to turn to, because they have sources that you and I just don't have. I don't know anybody in the Public Investment Fund. I wish I did. I don't. I'm not quite sure if you do. I think it's fair to look at Scott O'Neill's comments during the event in Mexico City 2 weeks ago, and you don't have to read between the lines too much. The idea that the fact of the matter is, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, they have funding through the end of this year, and then you work like crazy to come up with a new business model. I believe that's the quote that he used, or at least part of the quote. So the idea is they're trying to find a way to keep this going if and when the Public Investment Fund steps away at the end of this year. I think that's pretty accurate. I think we can have a conversation about that. I'm not quite sure where New Orleans lands in all of this. You're absolutely right. It should have been no shock that, one, it's hot in New Orleans in June. Two, the World Cup was going to be played in the summer, and everything else that's probably done during that window is going to be second, third, or fourth fiddle when it comes to the sports landscape. It's also, and I've talked to a couple of sources in New Orleans that I do have, the golf course was not in very good shape right now, and you had a really small window to get it anywhere close to some sort of tournament ready. The problem is all of the changes that I think LIV Golf and officials with the state and the city wanted at the golf course either haven't been completed or haven't even been started. I don't even think they've started working on the green. So this was probably a convergence of a lot of different things going on, probably not the least of which Scott O'Neill and LIV Golf trying to figure out what comes next after 2026. But this feels like a little bit different conversation than when we had 2 weeks ago.
It certainly does. But also keep in mind, 2 weeks ago, it was Scott O'Neill in a memo to staffers, players, and his fellow executives that LIV Golf was going to be, quote, full throttle moving forward through the remainder of 2026, and the schedule was going to be going off exactly as planned. Less than 2 weeks later, we already have a schedule issue with LIV Golf postponing its tournament. I think the biggest takeaway for me now, Rex, and again, LIV Golf does have an event on the schedule next week outside DC in the week ahead of the PGA Championship. If we're going to see Bryson DeChambeau, who's coming off the wrist injury, if he's going to play there, and Jon Rahm is going to continue his great form, at least on that circuit. The biggest takeaway for me is that LIV now does not have any tournaments scheduled between June 7th and July 23rd. And there are two major championships in between. And you're going to have some open qualifying as well, whether it's Golf's Longest Day or open qualifying trying to get to Birkdale. But I think the players who took the European Tour deal that was offered earlier this year are looking wiser by the minute, because all of a sudden they now have places to play this summer to prepare for the major championships, whether it's the David Puges, whether it's the Tyrrell Hattons, players of that ilk. I also thought it was notable that today's golfer and Ben Parsons, an up-and-coming journalist who I have a lot of respect for, also reported that several players have reached out to the DP World Tour inquiring about their options and potential opportunities the remainder of this season and certainly in 2027 if LIV somehow folds. And so it's the same conversation that we had with Bryson DeChambeau in the report from The Athletic that he and his team were talking to other tours at the Masters trying to see what those options are. That's just good business. That's just being smart. That's just weighing all of your options and opportunities. I don't think this is necessarily a news break. That's why we're not leading the podcast with it. But I do think it's notable that players are starting to look around a little bit just to make sure they have a landing spot if LIV Golf does not continue at the end of the 2026 season. Whether that 2026 season ends at the end of August or whether they go and have a fall event in New Orleans, which checks notes, that's during football season as well. So you're trying to avoid World Cup programming. And again, there are no World Cup matches in New Orleans. All of a sudden, you have LSU football and New Orleans Saints football as well, as I'm sure Trevor is well aware.
Yes, he's a big fan of Saints and the Bayou Oaks golf course, as some people call it.
Bayou
Oaks.
Bayou.
Okay, I think it's worth pointing out, and it was a good interview that they did, with Guy Kennings of the European Tour. And I would argue you're right. The players, I believe it was seven players, took the deal earlier this year from the DP World Tour. But it didn't sound to me as if Guy Kennings is being coy about offering the same deal to any player that he feels like can come back from LIV Golf and add any sort of value to that circuit. Sure. So I think it's a different tone than what you get from the PGA Tour. Certainly when you sit and you wait and you watch and see what the tour may or may not do with a player like a Bryson DeChambeau or a Jon Rahm, they could certainly roll out the same program that they did earlier this year when Brooks Koepka came back to the PGA Tour. I'm not quite sure how that lands with some of the membership. I think the other conversation is that came up around this earlier in the week was, let's say it's 52 players and they're all looking for a possible exit strategy. And I think that's a fair conversation. You're right. It's the proper conversation to be having right now. If you're in any line of work and you think that you might be coming to the end professionally, I think everybody would start looking at other avenues and places to play, places to sort of continue their careers. In this particular case, I think it's fair to say most of those 52 players are going to have to do it the way Patrick Reed did it. You're probably just going to have to earn your way back on to the PGA Tour through various outlets. I mean, here's the roadmap. You know what it looks like. You're probably going to have to sit out a year, and then you can start again, be it that Q School or the DP World Tour, trying to get on the Korn Ferry Tour, whatever the case may be. The couple that interests me the most, though, would be a Bryson DeChambeau. When you start hearing stories about he may walk away from LIV Golf, or he may not, because I think in his mind, and we've heard him say this recently, he's sort of invested in the concept of LIV Golf team.
Literally.
Very much. He has equity stakes in his team. I believe it's 25% of his team that he owns. Now, you and I have talked about this a lot. He was going to ask for a huge re-signing of a new contract based on just him winning the U.S. Open a couple of years ago at Pinehurst. I can see a scenario where they come up with some sort of version of a contract that makes him happy. Because I think it's fair to start having the conversation, does Bryson DeChambeau ever want to come back to the PGA Tour? I think it's 100% fair to have the same conversation about Jon Rahm, because we're already seeing it when it comes to the DP World Tour, that there's not enough sort of stepping back that the DP World Tour can do to bring John Rahm back, to convince him that, yes, this is worthwhile. Now, maybe this is bluster, and maybe this is him just trying to get the negotiations started on the right foot with him having the leverage, or maybe this is just his decision that this is where I want to be. Whatever this version of golf is going to look like, this is where I want to be. I think that's a legitimate conversation.
Yeah, that is a legitimate conversation. And those two players in particular are so different from Brooks Koepka and the pathway that was offered him. Brooks kept his mouth shut, did not trash the PGA Tour on the way out. He has remained popular with many of his peers. Bryson and John Rahm are different stories. Keep in mind, Bryson was part of the initial lawsuit against the PGA Tour, has always been a divisive figure. John Rahm, although he was liked before he left for LIV Golf, I think he has been blamed by many for helping sort of drag along golf civil war. And the idea of John Rahm, call it $300 million richer, coming back to the PGA Tour and having his cake and eating it too, I think is a conversation that not many PGA Tour players want to have as well. I do think, just to sort of circle back, the European Tour, the DP World Tour, could really be in for a significant boost if LIV does end at the end of the year, because the PGA Tour has already established the pathway with the Patrick where you have to sit out a year. So all of a sudden, you're looking at any of those players, whether they have status or not, sitting out at least a year. So this would be a 2028 conversation, most likely, before you're even getting back on the PGA Tour. Whereas the DP World Tour, and Guy Kinnings, he wants to help his tour however he can. Okay. And so if he can create a pathway and he can boost some of these Rolex Series events, and if he can sort of have the same program and pathway that's outlined, which is additional mandatory tournaments for the Tyrrell Hattons of the world who want to continue to play on the European Tour, that benefits not just the marquee events, which are going to be strong anyway, but also picks up a lot of the secondary tournaments as well for the European Tour. And so, you know, that's a long way down the road, but it is a more viable pathway for a lot of these players than an immediate return to the PGA Tour, as has been outlined. All right, Rex, anything else on your mind at this midweek edition of the podcast before we wrap it up?
All right, we're both getting ready to get back on the road. I believe you leave Sunday. You'll be in Connecticut next week during the Truist Championship. I'll be the reporter on the ground, so I leave Monday. So we're back at it then. But I have one more day to... We had some plumbing issues in our house. Yes, thank you, Omar, for fixing my plumbing. It was quite the ordeal. We didn't have sink. We didn't have the use of our sink for the better part of 3 days. That makes cooking really difficult. I don't think you realize how much you need your sink to cook.
I don't, because I have... I believe it's 8 or 9 grills. And so I always say, like, if the power goes out, if the sink isn't working, dishwasher's backed up, like, I'm totally fine, man. Totally fine. Thaw out some meat, throw it on the grill, and all of a sudden we are living. I thought it was going to be a toilet issue. Glad to hear that it was strictly just the sink.
Thankfully.
I will have swing videos, folks, from what happens, the ungodly happenings that happen at TPC Sawgrass on Thursday. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Tina, in advance. I do have to put a hard cap on it for about an hour. It's not going to help. I will have swing videos to show you exactly what the driver yips look like. We'll have a viewer discretion advised TVMA slapped on the podcast on Sunday night edition, which of course will be up on YouTube and airing on Golf Channel. I believe just one re-airing, 9 a.m. Eastern time on Monday, but plenty to get to and recapping the news of the week. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys on Sunday.